is Cascadia Public Radio.
Information is free. There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Yes, yes. But
tonight we care.
Here to border on
the
fence.
The country.
We will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Improve public safety by putting 1,000 additional observers on patrol in your neighborhood. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 138 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. For all your news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, Katrina, FEMA, and 4 years later, Ted, Dead Kennedys, Obama-Saya updates, eulogies, mercenaries, interrogations, debts up, polls down, and a mass vacation. CIA, SAIC, and West Virginia Christmas trees, DC drills, Falcon Virgo, 9/11 updates, anniversary ailments, plans and beams, police state, spy force, Peltier, propaganda, Carlin conspiracy, geopolitics, dark winter, October surprises, Fed failures, bailout bust, and ominous music on episode 138 of MediaMonarchy.com.
No more in a taxi, that's okay. I
And that's how you don't get picked up by more affiliates, my friends. F the CC, that's Steve Earle going back to his 2004 record, The Revolution Starts Now. And I believe we mentioned recently that that seemed to be the last time any kind of protest music was coming out, was around the 04 election. I got turned on to that song by a movie I watched the other day called Fuck, a documentary. It was awesome, and they rolled the credits with that song, and I thought it was quite appropriate. NSFW, my friends, not safe for work. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. It's episode 138, and it's August 28th, 2009. Coming to you, as always, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Also, thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com. Also blasting it out on 92.3 in Casper, Wyoming. It's 11 a.m. Mountain Time, the worldwide home of free speech. 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the East Coast right now, revereradio.net. And thanks to 98.5 Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org. Replaying the show Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. 93.9 Boulder, freeradio.com, KBFR. We've also got Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia, blasting out on 87.9. We've got CascadiaPublicRadio.org, helmed by Glenn from right here in Portland, Oregon. And big, great news. BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California, is rebroadcasting at MediaMonarchy.com. Huge thanks. I appreciate it. To the folks who may be new, welcome aboard. Every week, there's at least 2 hours of all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups fit to print. We busted out the B-side of episode 137 a little bit earlier this morning. We hit foodworldorder.com and cyberspacewar.com, two of the news sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom. And you know, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. Get the show. Spread the word. Spread the headlines. Start discussions. If things are even half as bad as they seem, we're in deep shit. But only by becoming informed can you make rational, regional, reasonable is what I meant to say, but regional makes sense as well. You got to do it local. And that's how we'll do it. And that's how we try and roll in the alternative media. We also, of course, covered the latest from James Corbett and the Corbett Report, as well as new documentaries coming out, The Fall of the Republic, An Invisible Empire. All that is on the previous B-side, so don't miss it. And let's glance at Google News right now and see what's happening on this morning of August 28th, 2009, and again, it's my personalized Google News, so don't exactly think that Ron Paul's audit the Fed bill to get October vote is the top of Google News, however, it is for me. CDC turns to Twitter and Facebook to promote swine flu message. You know we're going to get to that. Tropical storm Danny weakens, but don't mess with it. That's from ABC News. And we'll check back and see and make sure of any kind of developments while we're doing the show. I'd also like to mention the chat room that's over on ZeroPointRadio.com. Super easy, nothing to install. Type a name in, and you're up, and you're on. My man Clyde Lewis of the Ground Zero Lounge and GroundZeroMedia.org. He's been doing a new live show Friday nights at 10 Pacific time on ZeroPointRadio.com. His show last week was amazing. Tons of people in the chat room. It was nice, classic, solo, radio, Clyde Lewis. So much to check out. And again, many hands make light work. The more we can connect with all our brothers and sisters who are doing similar things, getting activated, before we get radio activated. So I just mentioned Tropical Storm Danny is weakening, which of course perfectly leads us into the fourth anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Just a quick little op-ed from USA Today, of all places. 4 years after Katrina, a mix of progress and inertia, Hurricane Katrina, which struck the Gulf Coast 4 years ago, was an eye-opener for all Americans. The inability of New Orleans to cope was shocking. The levees built to protect the city were failures. The follies of the Federal Emergency Management Agency were maddening. Surely a tragedy of this scale, and that's more than 1,600 deaths in Louisiana and Mississippi, a humiliation of this magnitude would prompt officials to prepare better for the next major hurricane. With Tropical Storm Danny threatening the Northeast this weekend and other storms potentially to come this hurricane season, it would be nice to believe that Katrina's lessons have been learned. We link over to just one of the many and growing amazing timelines on historycommons.org. It's just one of the best sites out there. It's something you don't have to hesitate about telling people to check out, because there's no blustering. There's no agenda. There's no blowhard that you don't really like. It's just documented reports put out in chronological order, cross-referenced, easy to search. And that's where you can really start to connect the dots. HistoryCommons.org has a timeline on Hurricane Katrina. We also link over to a recent story from the New York Times, the state of New Orleans, an update, and that was just posted yesterday. And we also have two recent ones from one of the main guys who has documented the madness surrounding Katrina. And that's, of course, Greg Palast. He has a couple of articles on GregPalast.com, as well as linked over on CrooksandLiars.com. Katrina, 4 years later, we recall that one of the experts who warned that the levees would burst, he was, of course, fired. Greg Palast made the documentary Big Easy to Big Empty. And the other piece we have is Economic Hitmen and the Next Drowning of New Orleans. Hurricane Bush, 4 years later, part two. We also have the flashback of the first anniversary on MediaMonarchy.com. Painful Lessons of Hurricane Katrina. That goes back to August 2006. That also kind of coincides right around with when I started Media Monarchy, just about. I believe, of course, the first posting on the site is appropriately enough from September 11th, 2005. I'll always remember I was working at a place called the Blue Moon Cafe in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, and I was getting set to move out of Shepherdstown, the town I'd lived in for 10 years. Getting ready to go west, young man, to where I am now in Portland, Oregon. So I had a lot of things going on, wasn't really paying attention. I knew that some bad hurricane was going down, but again, hadn't become quite the news junkie that I am now. And I came in to open one of those mornings, and again, can't remember the day, but it's right around now. And my boss asked me, he's like, are you paying attention to what's going on in New Orleans? It's like, no, not really. She, t- tears in her eyes, basically said, we pretty much just lost an American city. That always kind of stuck with me. One of those things that I wasn't paying particular attention to at the time, but looked back later and realized how right she was. A huge, disgusting, black mark on the country. And unfortunately, a test run in many ways, perhaps, of what we may be in store for when whatever new catalyzing and catastrophic event may unfold. Been postulating and speculating for quite a little while now on the show that we're either looking at some kind of bio attack in the form of swine flu, vaccine death, or what we would call an I-9-11, a cyber 9-11, where you're going to get punched in the Facebook. But I digress, and we will, of course, hit many of those points as we progress through this episode 138. Now, of course, the biggest story in the news right now and for the last several days and for at least the weekend and week to come, Senator Edward Kennedy dies at the age of 77 after his battle with cancer. This from the Associated Press. U.S. Senator Edward Kennedy, a towering figure in the Democratic Party who took the helm of one of America's most fabled political families after two older brothers were assassinated, died at the age of 77, his family said. I believe it was late Tuesday night, August 25th. I saw it when I woke up early Wednesday, the 26th. Edward N. Kennedy, the husband, father, grandfather, brother, and uncle we loved so deeply, died late Tuesday night at home in Hyannisport, Massachusetts, the Kennedy family said in a statement early on Wednesday. Kennedy had brain cancer, which was diagnosed in May 2008. He was one of the most influential and longest-serving senators in U.S. history, a liberal standard-bearer, who recovered politically from a string of personal scandals to become known as a consummate congressional dealmaker. Known as Teddy, he was the brother of President John F. Kennedy, assassinated in 1963. Senator Robert Kennedy, fatally shot while campaigning for the 1968 Democratic presidential nomination, and Joe Kennedy, a pilot killed in World War II. After RFK's death, Edward was expected to waste little time in vying for the presidency, but in 1969, a young woman drowned after a car Kennedy was driving plunged off a bridge on the Massachusetts resort island of Chappaquiddick after a night of partying. Kennedy's image was tarnished after it emerged he had failed to report the accident to authorities. He pleaded guilty to leaving the scene and received a suspended sentence. Kennedy eventually ran for his party's presidential nomination in 1980, but lost to then-President Jimmy Carter. His presidential ambitions thwarted, Kennedy devoted himself to his Senate career. Senator Edward Kennedy, dead at the age of 77.
Senator Ted Kennedy rose from the shadows of his famous brothers to become a stalwart in Congress and one of the most recognizable and influential lawmakers of his time.
It is wrong for the administration to beat the drums of war.
Edward M. Kennedy was the youngest of nine children in what would become one of the most famous and powerful political families in American history. A graduate of Harvard and Virginia Law School, he cut his political teeth helping his older brother, John F. Kennedy, run for president in 1960. 2 years later, at the age of 30, he himself was elected to fill the Senate seat his brother had vacated. With that win, the Kennedy family had risen to the top of American politics, having one brother in the White House, another, Robert, as Attorney General, and Ted as a member of Congress. It's a post he would never leave, getting re-elected 8 times. Although more prominent seats on the Senate floor became available, he never abandoned the desk his brother once occupied. Ted Kennedy helped the family carry on after his brother was assassinated in Texas in 1963. He was severely injured himself the next year when a plane he was in crashed, killing two other people on board.
4 years after that, his brother Robert was assassinated while running for president. The weight of the family fell solely on him.
My brother need not be idealized or enlarged in death beyond what he was in life. Be remembered simply as a good and decent man. He saw wrong and tried to right it. Saw suffering and tried to heal it. Saw war and tried to stop it. Those of us who loved him and who take him to his rest today, pray that what he was to us, what he wished for others, will someday come to pass for all the world.
In 1969, Kennedy ran headlong into scandal. He drove his car off a bridge on Chappaquiddick Island in Massachusetts. While he was able to get out, the passenger in his car, Mary Jo Kopechne, died. Kennedy later pleaded guilty to leaving the scene of an accident and was given a suspended 2-month sentence.
Whether some awful curse did actually hang over all the Kennedys,
he deflected calls for him to run for the White House, instead building up his stature in the Senate, where he was fast becoming one of the most effective Democratic leaders. He did test the presidential waters in 1980 when he tried to wrest the nomination away from incumbent President Jimmy Carter. He won 10 primaries that year, but later bowed out of the race. He returned to the Senate, where he continued to gain power and served as the chairman of the Health and Education Committee. He also held seats on the powerful Armed Services Committee and the Judiciary Committee. However, tragedy wouldn't leave the family alone. He was again called on to help the country mourn, this time after the passing of his nephew, John F. Kennedy Jr. In 2006, Time magazine recognized him as one of America's 10 best senators, and stating that he had a record of legislation that affected the lives of nearly every single American. Kennedy returned to the presidential spotlight in 2008, but not as a candidate.
I have seen him in the Senate. He will keep us strong, defend the nation against real threats.
He announced his staunch support for fellow Senator Barack Obama. Later that year, he was diagnosed with a brain tumor. At the time of his passing, he was second only to Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia as the most senior member of the Senate. Ed Donahue, The Associated Press.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you.
Now you caught that there at the end. You know, of course, that Robert Byrd from my home state is the longest serving senator. And there are several links in this posting. Just to general things like Wikipedia, but also HistoryCommons.org. We've got the Washington Times, the Boston Globe, which has a massive report. Of course, it being Boston, Massachusetts. Time.com. More on Chappaquiddick, and even a couple of updates. Interestingly enough, President Obama to deliver the eulogy at Edward Kennedy's funeral tomorrow. That's by way of the Washington Times. We've also got video from Raw, story, motorcade carrying Kennedy's body to JFK Library. And of course, it's going to be all over the news, and it's going to be endless. So when it's one of those stories that's so huge, I must stop following it because I'm not going to be able to provide anything that isn't super readily available. However, flying against what I just said, here is something, a couple of quotes you won't hear anywhere else. When Edward Kennedy died, I looked through some of the books on my shelf to see what I could find going on in the background of Camelot. And of course, what do we go to but Sinister Forces by Peter Lavenda. It's in book 3 of his trilogy, Sinister Forces, published by Trine Day, by Chris Milligan from right out here in Oregon. We first hit a quote from Senator Edward Kennedy. Quote, "What we're basically talking about is an activity which took place in the country that involved the perversion and the corruption of many of our outstanding research centers in the country with CIA funds, where some of our top researchers were unwittingly involved in research sponsored by the agency in which they had no knowledge of the background or the support for. Much of it was done with American citizens who were completely unknowing in terms of taking various drugs, and there are perhaps any number of Americans who are walking around today on the East Coast or West Coast who were given drugs, with all the kinds of physical and psychological damage that can be caused. We have gone over that in very careful detail, and it is significant and severe indeed. End quote. Senator Edward Kennedy, during the 1977 Senate hearing testimony of CIA Director Stansfield Turner on Project MKUltra. And that was said on August 3rd, 1977, a mere 10 days before I was born. But of course it goes deeper. If we now jump back to literally the last page of the last chapter of the last book of the trilogy, Sinister Forces, it goes deeper. We could sum up with a quotation from the late lamented Walt Kelly's Pogo comic strip, "We have met the enemy, and he is us." Once we realize this, we can begin to make America the place of greatness and beauty and transcendence that it was intended to be by our founding fathers, who were, after all, Freemasons and Rosicrucians and Templars and Freethinkers and mystics who believed in spiritual regeneration and psychological integration. Instead, we'll end with another quotation. That first Sunday in June 1968 at the funeral for Robert F. Kennedy, the last best hope for a renewed America for a long time to come, his brother, Senator Edward Kennedy, read the eulogy. It contained Bobby's favorite quotation, one that he would use to revive his flagging spirits or to raise the energy of his followers. It's a beautiful sentiment. But how many listeners in St. Patrick's Cathedral in Manhattan that solemn spring day realized the original context? As Bobby's body lay in the center aisle of that Gothic pile, surrounded by those who loved and admired him, his robopathic assassin in jail in Los Angeles staring stupidly around him in confusion, the men who authorized that murder toasting themselves in comfort in the boardrooms and cloakrooms and living rooms and conference rooms and bedrooms of America, some of them even there in the church, watching the funeral service with cynical satisfaction, knowing that the last assassination had taken place and that America was ripe for the plunder. The words of their sinister God were being quoted as epitaph. Quote, "You see things and you say, why? You see things and you say, why? But I dream things that never were and I say, why not?" That quote comes from George Bernard Shaw's Back to Methuselah, and they are the words of the devil. I never knew that. Sinister forces indeed. And now we move to the present puppet. And all those things back there that we can't quite put our finger on. The sinister forces, the conspiracies, the cover-ups, the limited hangouts, the plausible deniability. Past is prologue. Obama authorizes elite interrogation team for terrorism. This from the Associated Press. President Barack Obama has approved creation of a new, special terrorism-era interrogation unit to be supervised by the White House, a top aide said Monday, further distancing his administration from President George W. Bush's detainee policies. The administration has also decided that all U.S. interrogators will follow the rules for detainees laid out by the Army Field Manual, according to senior administration officials who, of course, spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to discuss the decision. That decision aims to end years of fierce debate about how rough U.S. personnel can get with terror suspects in custody. The new unit does not mean the CIA is now out of the interrogation business, Deputy White House Press Secretary Bill Burton told reporters covering the vacationing Obama at Oak Bluffs, Massachusetts, Burton said that the unit will include all these different elements under one group, and it said that it will be situated at the FBI headquarters in Washington.
Well, for starters, I can confirm the Washington Post report is largely accurate and that the president, at the consensus recommendation of his interagency task force on interrogations and detainees, did put in place a new group, the high-value interrogation group, which will be housed at the FBI. The president's view is that intelligence gathering is best left to the intelligence community, and this is a way that the intelligence community can best operate, especially in these high-value instances. The president's view is that we can always work harder to protect the American people. And when he signed an executive order that put this task force in place to find new methods by which we can get more intelligence by scientifically proven means, he thought that they would be able to come up with a good plan in order to do just that. He has full confidence in the plan, and he's going to continue to support it forward. The CIA is obviously has a very important role to play as it relates to interrogations. They've done a brilliant job in doing it so far, gathering intelligence. A lot of people don't know that half of the FBI's mission is actually to gather intelligence. So what this does is it houses all these different elements under one group where they can best perform their duties. The intelligence community is going to have a deputy who will be in that group, and obviously the CIA will be very involved in this.
Now, of course, it's important to mention that actually, quote-unquote, distancing his administration from Bush's policies would actually mean ending the war of terror. That's, of course, based on the lies of 9/11. And he would prosecute the previous puppet's war crimes, and he wouldn't continue to inflate the debt. This is all just more change we can't believe in. So let's go into some of those. The lies of 9/11. Let's just hit the link to world911truth.org, where we note that the 9/11 Commission was set up to fail. And there is a clip, you can check it. But the quote from Governor Thomas Keene, chairman of the 9/11 Commission, quote, "We think the commission, in many ways, was set up to fail because we had not enough money, we didn't have enough time, and we have been appointed by the most partisan people in Washington," end quote. They even go into it further in their book, Without Precedent, The Inside Story of the 9/11 Commission. How about prosecuting the previous puppets' war crimes? Liberal New York Democrat Congressman and Judiciary Committee member Gerald Nadler, in an interview with the Huffington Post, of course, notes that Obama will be, quote, violating the law, end quote, if his administration declines to investigate Bush officials for their role in torturing detainees. It's always pardons. It's always, let's not get mired in the past. Let's move forward. And CNSNews.com covers our debt. Obama's spending plans will nearly double the national debt. The White House leaked the news late last Friday. Went to Reuters. The White House concluded that the national debt will increase by $9 trillion over the next 10 years, nearly doubling a national debt that now stands at $11.67 trillion. Change they can deceive in. There's more in there to read about the Army Field Manual, as well as that Washington Post report that Bill Burton told reporters about. That's largely accurate. And there's more from the Deutsche Press Agency. Obama authorizes elite interrogation team for terrorism. And that's supposed to be distancing from the previous puppet. Furthermore, the more things change, my friends, the more they stay the goddamn same. We've got Jeremy Scahill and Helen Thomas on the Blackwater CIA and murder squads. First, Jeremy Scahill, again, wrote the book on Blackwater. And according to the Washington Post, Blackwater received millions of dollars to train CIA teams in simulated kidnappings. Author Jeremy Scahill comments on the outsourcing of assassination.
I don't think it's necessarily the case that the Bush administration thought it was a bad idea. I mean, let's remember here what's at the center, the epicenter of this scandal is the fact that Dick Cheney is alleged to have ordered the CIA to conceal from the Congress, which has oversight authority, the existence of a secret CIA assassination plan. Blackwater was on from almost day one of the so-called war on terror as part of the war that Bush labeled a crusade. They worked overtly for the administration. We know as of May of 2002, they were boots on the ground in Afghanistan. I'm not so sure that the program has even ended to this day. Blackwater continues to be paid by the United States government for work in both Afghanistan and Iraq. The issue here, Keith, as Representative Janczkowski told me last night, is how far up the chain did the relationship between Eric Prince and the administration go? She said to me that clearly the Bush administration trusted Eric Prince, the mercenary kingpin of Blackwater, more than the elected representatives of the Congress who were supposed to have oversight because they shared these details with him and not the Congress. So shortly after 9/11, a.k.a. Buzzy Krongard, the number three man at the CIA, meets with Eric Prince, and they authorize a $5 million black contract, a covert contract for Blackwater to insert inside of Afghanistan in Kabul, as well as in a town called Shkin, which is along the Afghan-Pakistan border, where Blackwater and the CIA operated out of a mud fortress that they called the Alamo. Prince went over, he's himself a former Navy SEAL, went over with that initial Blackwater deployment, and then after a week or so there, according to a CIA operative that we talked to for my book, Prince then went to Kabul to try to win more business for Blackwater. That launched Blackwater, Keith, as a mercenary operation. At the time that Prince and Krongard were crafting this relationship between the CIA and Blackwater, you had Kofor Black running the CIA's counterterrorism center, leading the hunt for bin Laden, talking about the gloves have come off. There was a before 9/11, after 9/11, and saying that there were no limits on what operatives would be authorized to do in hunting down terrorists. So you have this history of Blackwater from 2002 to the present, where they worked overtly and covertly for the U.S. government, and then Prince hires Kofor Black, Buzzy Krongard, Robert Richard, former deputy director of the CIA, Enrique Rick Prado, a veteran of the CIA paramilitary division, to run his own private CIA called Total Intelligence Solutions, which works simultaneously for the U.S. government and foreign governments. What you have here is a confirmation that Blackwater not only was working in overt capacity for the State Department and for the Department of Defense, where they were overtly killing people, shooting Iraqi civilians, etc., all in day's work, so to speak, but that they also were involved at the highest level of clandestine operations. Blackwater, we now know, served as a buffer between the executive branch of the government and accountability. Mm-hmm. In other words, what you have is the White House being able to have ultimate plausible deniability because you don't even have your own CIA guys doing it. You actually have farmed it out to a private company. What this was effectively, Keith, was a hit squad that responded to one branch of government, the executive branch, at the expense of any oversight or involvement of the other two. I would say that this was unconstitutional.
And of course, it is unconstitutional, and it is continuing to this day in our name. That was a chopped up clip. I cut out the Olbermann, cut out him, of course, anytime any kind of implication that this, of course, is still going on under the current puppet. Because, of course, the phony left and the phony right talking heads need to keep it within the fake left-right paradigm. But so many things Scahill hits in there. Oh, and you even heard him say plausible deniability. But he's talking about the CIA and Buzzy Krongard, who is directly connected to pre-9/11 insider trading, connected to Deutsche Bank. It's all right there. Now we jump to the press room to Helen Thomas, who, as we noted a couple weeks ago, shares a birthday with Obamasiah. She would like the CIA to stop the killing. Veteran White House correspondent Helen Thomas just wants the CIA to stop the killing. Thomas asked White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs if President Obama planned to put an end to contracts with the firm formerly known as Blackwater. We, of course, know they're now known as ZXE. The New York Times recently reported that Blackwater had been hired by the CIA to hunt down members of Al-Qaeda.
Yes, sir.
Has the president heard the end of the contract that he had with the assassination mercenary?
Do you mean Blackwater? I asked for an update, which I have not yet gotten, on where we are in different contracts. I would, as it relates to CIA's use of contracting, I would point you specifically to them for responses on that.
I don't think they would help.
They may tell you help. I don't know. If you use that sweet voice on the phone, you never know what you could get. Savannah?
I want them to stop killing.
You should let them know.
You should too.
I know.
I hope you're listening.
Oh, it's all so funny, isn't it? Use your sweet little voice. Stop the killing. And like any good White House press briefing, it pretty much says everything and nothing all at once. They say nothing while showing complete contempt for, yes, life, liberty. And it gets worse, and we keep going down the hole to the next posting on MediaMonarchy.com. War whores, CIA, SAIC, certified and embedded. I actually did just realize recently that SAIC is essentially CIA's backwards. It's appropriate. Hell, I even on my way home last week after the show saw an SAIC van parked in southeast Portland, Oregon, so I'm not sure who they're doing work for down here. But they're, of course, connected to the Central Intelligence Agency. They, of course, like to be involved in all the police state, martial law, military drills that are going on around the country all the time, which, of course, we'll get to. War whore, CIA, SAIC, certified and embedded. First up, from Stars and Stripes, Stripes.com, journalists' recent work examined before embeds. As more journalists seek permission to accompany U.S. forces engaged in escalating military ops in Afghanistan, many of them could be screened by a controversial Washington-based PR firm contracted by the Pentagon to determine whether their past coverage has portrayed the U.S. military in a positive light. U.S. public affairs officials in Afghanistan acknowledged to Stars and Stripes that any reporter seeking to embed with U.S. forces is subject to a background profile by the Rendon Group, R-E-N-D-O-N. They, of course, gained notoriety in the run-up to the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq. They're known for their work in helping create the Iraqi National Congress. That opposition group, reportedly funded by the CIA, furnished much of the false information about Iraq's supposed weapons of mass destruction used by the previous puppets to justify the invasion that goes on to this day with the current puppet. So if they don't like your previous work, you ain't gonna get more work. It works the same way, I believe, in Operation Hollywood. In the military media industrial complex, if your movie's going to be favorable toward the military, well, you'll get access to all their great new gadgets for your latest Transformers, Enemy of the State, Pearl Harbor bullshit from Michael Bay. A couple more bits on the embed screening. Danger Room covers the Pentagon reporter screening crisis as it deepens. And get a load of this. From multichannel.com, AFTRA joins the outcry over the Pentagon embed vetting. The American Federation of Radio and Television Artists Wednesday joined the International Federation of Journalists and other groups to condemn what they say was the U.S. military's vetting of journalists seeking military protection to cover the war in Afghanistan. Stars and Stripes reports that the PR firm, the Rendon Group, may be screening those journalists to see whether they plan to portray the military positively, saying one of its reporters was refused an embed because he would not highlight the good news. The paper says it obtained documents that prove the Pentagon is grading coverage as positive, neutral, or negative to help manipulate the type of stories that reporters will produce while embedded. That's a quote from that Stars and Stripes report. So, AFTRA. There you go. The American Federation of Radio and Television Artists. Strange times make for strange bedfellows, and you see different groups joining up as we all start to realize this sort of encroaching tyranny on all these different levels. And then again, that's pretty much what it's all about. Working with each other. It's not red state versus blue state, it's the state versus you. A report says, oh, it's shocking, shocking report. CIA faked executions on terror suspects.
Tonight there are new allegations of torture by the CIA. Newsweek magazine is reporting that a secret 2004 report reveals that interrogators use mock executions to intimidate prisoners. And a federal judge has ordered the release Monday of that five-year-old Inspector General's report. Earlier today, I spoke with one of the authors of the article, Newsweek investigative correspondent Mark Hosenball, and asked him about more about what's in the previously classified document.
The report is going to reveal for the first time that the CIA conducted what are described as mock executions of some of the high-value detainees, more than one from the sounds of things. And in the case of one detainee that we know about, somebody named Abdelrahman al-Nashiri, who was an alleged architect of the USS Cole bombing. This report alleges that at some point CIA interrogators, whether they're contractors or CIA staff officers, brandished a gun in front of this guy in an effort to frighten him, and also took a power drill in front of him and turned it on and went bzzz, implying therefore that they're going to use it on him.
Does this report make an investigation by Attorney General Holder more likely?
Well, Attorney General Holder, in interviews with some of my colleagues at Newsweek and in other statements for the last two or three months, has been making pretty strong hints that he does want to conduct a criminal investigation of whether officials at the CIA exceeded Justice Department guidelines laid down by the Bush administration.
Mark Hosenball, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
We have more on that from the Washington Post. CIA used gun and drill in interrogation. IG report describes tactics against alleged USS Cole mastermind. CIA interrogators used a handgun and an electric drill to try and frighten a captured Al-Qaeda commander into giving up info, according to a long-concealed agency report due to be made public next week, which is now last week, and it is. SAIC, they were just awarded a $49 million contract task order by the Naval Surface Warfare Center. Just keeping an eye on the private military contractors. From military.com, by way of the French agency press, 2009 is now the deadliest year of the Afghanistan war. The number of foreign soldiers killed in Afghanistan this year surpassed that for all of 2008 on Tuesday, with the deaths of four U.S. military personnel in bomb blasts in the country's south. I believe because it's the French report, they refer to the American soldiers as foreign soldiers. But no, we also, of course, have NATO. The soldiers operating under NATO's International Security Assistance Force were killed by an improvised bomb, the Taliban's weapon of choice, in southern Afghanistan. The latest casualties bring to 63 the number of foreign soldiers who have died in Afghanistan this month, and to 295 the death toll since January, making this the deadliest year for foreign troops since their 2001 arrival. Every week, every month, we're breaking records. Deaths abroad, bank failures at home. We've got more from Raw Story. MSNBC contributor Michael Isikoff, of course, connected to Newsweek. And again, what's MSNBC? Microsoft and General Electric. But he went on the Rachel Maddow show, which was being guest hosted by Alison Stewart, who I remember from MTV. So it's always bizarre to see these cats that I grew up watching on MTV or Channel 1 now are trusted newsreaders. Isikoff goes over one of the newly released CIA reports that reveals the, quote, unauthorized, impoverished methods, end quote, interrogators used against detainees. We return to the Washington Post for the CIA releasing its instructions for breaking a detainee's will. This was published Wednesday, August 26th. 5 years after the CIA's secret detention program came to light, much is known about the spy agency's decision to use harsh techniques, including waterboarding, to pry information from alleged al-Qaeda leaders. Now, with the release late Monday of Guidelines for Interrogating High-Value Detainees, with a link for you to download the PDF, the agency has provided, in its own words, the first detailed description of the step-by-step procedures used to systematically crush a detainee's will to resist by eliciting stress, exhaustion, and fear. The guidelines, along with thousands of pages from other newly released documents, again with a link for you, also show how the CIA gradually imposed limits on the program and eliminated some of the most controversial practices after the agency's medical advisors protested. I'm sure that was only some of them, because we, of course, know that lots of other doctors all went along with it. Which reminds me of the quote we read from Ted Kennedy, talking about MK Ultra. We know. It's what they do. The last bit on the War Horse posting, still harping on the agency. Criminals in action. This from cnews.knu.ca by way of the Associated Press. CIA spy certified with 2 weeks training. With just 2 weeks of training, or about half the time it takes to become a truck driver, the CIA certified its spies as interrogation experts after 9/11 and handed them the keys to the most coercive tactics in the agency's arsenal. It was a haphazard process cobbled together in the months following the terrorist attacks on New York and Washington by an agency that had never been in the interrogation business. The result was a patchwork program in which rules kept shifting and the goals often were unclear. Certified in 2 weeks. And as they just said, it's harder to become a truck driver. We covered the recent article, Interrogation Incorporated. And we mentioned how the doctors went along with it. We covered a couple of weeks ago the upcoming Martin Scorsese film, Shutter Island, that I believe is going to be exactly about that. Some rogue doctor who was, of course, operating under MKUltra protocols, but he went crazy. The whitewash. It went too far. But the orders still come from on high. So that's the War Horse. CIA, SAI, CIA, certified and embedded. So as we've noted, time and time again, the more things change, it's time for some updates on the Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. Debts up, polls down, and a Massachusetts vacation. We first note from Bloomberg that Obama has raised the 2010 deficit outlook 19% to now $1.5 trillion. We already mentioned that a little bit ago. We're so in debt. We're a stone's throw away. Which, as long as I'm mentioning the banksters, I finally closed down my J.P. Morgan Chase account. It was, of course, gobbled up. Or rather, what it was before, Washington Mutual, was gobbled up by the J.P. Morgan Chase monster in collusion with the FDIC. Something, I basically stopped using it, and there was $50 on there or something, and I accidentally charged something to it, something through Amazon, yada yada, so I got an overdraft, and I knew I had to actually go and take the time and go there and close it down. And then, of course, they try and tell you to stay and blah, blah, blah. Always in the back of my mind thinking, don't launch into some anti-bankster rant. And I even double-checked before I left, just in case it came up, you know, that I would have to mention that, you know, folks like J.P. Morgan, as well as the Mellons and the Rockefellers and all that shit, have always colluded throughout the years. They fund both sides. They were involved with Nazi Germany. It's all documented. And we don't trust them. I guess, fortunately for someone, or perhaps unfortunately for both of us, I didn't get into any of that, and I quickly, quietly, so no, thanks, let's shut it down, giving. I overheard an elderly man nearby at another desk. He mentioned something about gold, and the teller was like, oh, I don't really know about gold. I never really even thought about it. I know some people were into it, but it was new. I went and almost stand and be like, dude, you shouldn't buy gold. Just let's all get the fuck out of here. Let's all take our money out. They make money off us. It's pretty much the story throughout much of civilization. International banksters against you. Obama vacations as poll numbers keep falling. This from the Washington Times. President Obama set out for a week-long family vacation last Sunday, facing the first stiff headwind of his presidency, with public polls showing his popularity has dipped as he has attempted an overhaul of the nation's ailing health care system. A series of national surveys has confirmed what was becoming clear as large groups of protesters rallied outside the speeches and town hall events the president hosted last week in western states. The Rasmussen Reports daily tracking poll, linked up for you, it's up on RasmussenReports.com, released last Sunday, showed that 41% of voters strongly disapprove of Mr. Obama's performance as president, compared with 27% who strongly approved. Rasmussen said those numbers are the worst ever for Mr. Obama. The 14-point gap between the two numbers is more than double the 6-point difference in the Rasmussen poll as recently as the Thursday before that. The total disapproval responses of whatever strength topped the approval numbers by 51-48. And using unusually strong language to describe the developments, borne out in a host of polls over the past week, political analyst Charlie Cook said in an email to his subscribers that, quote, the situation this summer has slipped completely out of control for President Obama and congressional Democrats. We believe it would be a mistake to underestimate the impact that this mood will have on members of Congress of both parties when they return to Washington in September if it persists through the end of the congressional recess. The situation this summer has slipped completely out of control. You can read more of that from the Chicago Sun-Times, linked up. We've got more from CBS News, as well as the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Obama vacations as the poll numbers keep falling. Now, I went last Monday to Dante's in downtown Portland, Oregon, for the live episode of Clyde Lewis and the Ground Zero Lounge awaiting Obamageddon. And something I did mention on the mic, on the show, is what's got me kind of queasy is this feeling that we've seen this before. We've seen this summer where a new president comes in really high and sailing but immediately starts to flounder. And slowly but surely the wheels come off. And what do? They spend more time on vacation. And things... everything changed, I should say, in September. So will everything change this September as we await, again, a bio event or a cyber event? I want you to think about that for just a moment. Meanwhile, my friends, looking at the clock, we're now into hour number two of episode 138 of Media Monarchy. It's August 28th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, CyberspaceWar.com. And this transmission, as always, originates from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And thanks to our amazing affiliates, ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, FROLympia.org, BoulderFreeRadio.com, CascadiaPublicRadio.org, and, again, happy to announce, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, 104.1 FM, is rebroadcasting MediaMonarchy.com. Having said that, let's continue the Obamasiah updates. That's up, polls down, and a mass vacation. We'll, of course, mention again, but this ties in with what we already went over, with Blackwater and CIA and torture and rendition and drills. Ah, but not the terror drills. Power drills, you know. From the Australian, they note, quite simply, that Obama continues rendition. The Obama administration will continue the Bush administration's policy of extraordinary rendition. That's the clever euphemism for sending terror suspects to third world countries for detention interrogation, but of course they've pledged to closely monitor the program to ensure those held are not being tortured. And more from the AFP on, of course, that new interrogation unit. But an interesting note from a few different websites, but we're sourcing it mainly from isteve.blogspot.com, asking the question, did Obama pal around with the CIA? My favorite conspiracy theory for the last few months has been that the young Obama benefited from some CIA favors along the way, perhaps in transferring to Columbia or in getting his copy editor job at Business International, a firm with apparently ties to the CIA and SDS, Students for a Democratic Society. We have a link to, of course, Cannon Fire, that pulls together in a disorganized fashion various bits of evidence. There's nothing conclusive, but the young Obama probably had many more indirect links with the CIA before the age of 25 than you did. We'll also note again that John Pilger made references to Obama, CIA, Business International, the mystery years around Columbia, in Dreams of My Father. He doesn't even say anything about who he got hired for or when he got hired. It's Business International Corporation. Again, we'll note that Jerry Nadler says that Obama is violating the law by not investigating Bush officials. Sometimes the stories get doubled up, but I think it's worth it just to kind of catapult the propaganda. again from the Washington Times, and again, we don't want to get caught up in the phony partisan politics. However, having said that, we'll return to the Washington Times with a quick little mention about John Voight. A Hollywood conservative has headed east. It's freedom concert time for John Voight. The Academy Award winner will join Sean Hannity in Cincinnati and Atlanta this weekend to honor fallen soldiers and present college scholarships to the surviving children. Mr. Voight, a warrior himself in many ways, has been cogitating about the state of America meanwhile. Quote, there's a real question at stake right now. Is President Obama creating a civil war in our own country? We are witnessing a slow, steady takeover of our true freedoms. We are becoming a socialist nation. And whoever can't see this is probably hoping it isn't true. If we permit Mr. Obama to take over all our industries, if we permit him to raise our taxes to support unconstitutional causes, then we will be in defeat. This great America will become a paralyzed nation. That's John Voight getting it kind of right. If we permit him to raise our taxes to support unconstitutional causes, I'm sure he wouldn't count the fraudulent war of terror as one of those. Phony left, right. And this ain't socialism. It's the buzzwords. It's the bullshit. It's the footballs they throw at us. And we bandy them back and forth. Again, fighting with each other. To get into this a little deeper, and in a way that I think puts it all together, and will debunk the socialist myth within this clip, where we have author, historian, journalist, radio host, Webster Tarpley, pointing out, warning, perhaps, that Obama's false flag or catalyzing catastrophic event is waiting in the wings.
The lemming leader Olbermann has come on the air saying, for the first time, it looks to me like Obama has no idea where he is or what he's doing. And we'll go through some editorial comments about these things in the same way. So, the betrayal, the massive, cynical, calculated betrayal of the Democratic base on the weekend of the 15th and the 16th is highly indicative. And then, on Monday the 17th, this is the old 1-2. The first one was the healthcare betrayal, and the second one now is warmongering, as in Afghanistan escalation, endless war, torture, the war criminal McChrystal, Obama's hand-picked candidate to be the commander in Afghanistan, a torturing war criminal left over from the hot phase of Iraq. So Obama now goes to the meeting of the Veterans of Foreign Wars in Phoenix and gives a speech worthy of Bush, worthy of Cheney. Obama channels Bush and Cheney in Phoenix, where you look at this speech, he's got 9/11 in there. He's got new 9/11. He says, if we don't clean out the Taliban in Afghanistan, we face a new 9/11. There will be a new 9/11. Unbelievable. 9/11 people, please take note. This is now a change. This is actually a shift. I'm the first one to register it when it happens. Obama had stayed away from that stuff quite studiously. And indeed, the implications here may be deeper than just the demagogy and verbiage coming out of Obama's mouth. We may now be seeing, as this administration crumbles, we may now see a kind of reversion to the Pavlovian reflexes built up under Bush-Cheney. And of course, that's a big problem because that's an invitation to false flag. We have to keep our eye on that. Well, maybe we have time for that later, too. But be warned, right? Increase the vigilance. Monitor the drills, above all, because that's how it's done, as I showed exhaustively and conclusively in 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA. So that, I think, was a wake-up call to a lot of people in the peace movement. But now you put these two things together. the massive, systematic, cynical betrayal of the healthcare front, and now the increasingly blatant, arrogant, warmongering, bloodthirsty, reactionary policy on Afghanistan and indeed related areas. Don't forget Georgia. Don't forget Ukraine. Don't forget Poland. My God, the Polish missile crisis looks closer than ever in the light of this kind of rhetoric from Obama. You can say this is a reaction to try to shore up the collapsing right flank. But of course, in shoring up the collapsing right flank, Obama is now exposing the flank that is much more dangerous for him in the short to medium run, in particular, the left flank, the peace movement flank. And that is where I think people have got to become active. So let's now look. We'll look in the next segment, and we're going to go through some of these very, very interesting statements from Cindy Sheehan and the guidance that these give to the renascent, we hope, peace movement.
And we'll get to Cindy Sheehan and the peace movement in just a moment. And that was just a quick clip from a recent radio show from Webster Tarpley, World Crisis Radio. It runs on GCNlive.com. And it didn't have in there, I must have cut it down, where he talks about this isn't socialism. This is the international banksters. This is corporatism. This is what Mussolini said. Well, fascism, it's not really maybe correct. It's more like corporatism. And so whether the state takes over the corporations, which is communism, I think, or when the corporations take over the state, that's fascism, that's corporatism. Either way, the end result is the same, and we, the people, get screwed. And so we will watch the drills. More on that in a little bit. But what relates, with another mention of false flag, again, false flag, I was trying to explain it to someone one time, and they immediately were like, oh, like hitting your own gang. Yes, that's exactly it. That's a nice, simple way to put it. Hitting your own gang and acting like somebody else did it. Question by Kurt Nemo. False flag at Democrat headquarters in Denver. It turns out the man accused of smashing windows at the Dem headquarters in Denver is a former Democrat. Earlier in the week, a Democratic Party chairwoman said the vandals were people opposed to Obamacare. Quote, an act of vandalism at Colorado Democratic headquarters that shattered windows next to signs about health care reform took a strange turn Wednesday when it was revealed that one of the suspects was a Democratic activist. That's a quote from the Associated Press. Further, Democratic leaders initially said that the window shattering was an act of political vandalism, possibly by opponents of health care reform. But the political leanings of suspect Maurice Schwenkler raised the prospect that one of the party's own might have vandalized its building to make a statement. Again, that's from the Associated Press. And then on Thursday, the crime took a turn for the weird. In what a Republican lawmaker has touted as a bid to win sympathy for Democrats, an anarchist transgender person allegedly shattered windows at the Democratic headquarters in Denver, Colorado. EdgeBoston.com has that quote. It said that the accused vandal, Maurice Schwenkler, a.k.a. Ariel Attack, A-R-I-E-L, Ariel Attack, is a writer connected to Queers Against Obama. And that fact is established by Colorado.IndieMedia.org. There is a blog, I believe it's called Gays Against Obama, but you can't look at it, it's private, you have to be a member to check it out. Hitting your own gang. False flag. And again, we ask the question, where is the anti-war movement in the age of Obama? It appears that most liberal opponents of the wars in the Middle East and Central Asia have ceased their opposition With the Obama presidency, the liberal Dems who abhorred Bush's war policy and most grassroots liberal Democrats did vehemently oppose the Bush war policy, although this was not always the case with the liberal politicians and media figures. So those folks who abhorred Bush's war policy apparently were simply opposed to wars led by Republicans. As Byron York, a conservative, writes, quote, "For many liberal activists, opposing the war was really about opposing Bush. When Bush disappeared, so did their anti-war passion." Anti-war protest leader Cindy Sheehan agrees completely, stating, quote, "The anti-war left was used by the Democratic Party. I like to call it the anti-Republican war movement." Fortunately, by way of ABC News, as well as Cindy Sheehan's soapbox.blogspot.com, Cindy Sheehan is bringing the anti-war, anti-Obama message to Martha's Vineyard. As all the well-dressed misleaders of the world will be, of course, converging for the dead Kennedy's funeral. And I shouldn't say that. That's kind of callous. But it fits. Cindy Sheehan brings the anti-war, anti-Obama message to Martha's Vineyard and says, "We have the moral high ground." Shifting gears, a couple last stories of Obamasiah updates, a couple stories about trees. The first one from the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, normal.org, anti-marijuana zealot still employed by Obama. No employee of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, ONDCP, sans the director, has ever drawn more public and academic criticism than David Murray, the Office of National Drug Control Policy's chief scientist, David Murray. Virtually an entire book was derived from the Drug Control Policy Office and their twisted science and twisted statistical data during Dr. David Murray's 8-year tenure. Dr. Matthew Robinson's Lies, Damn Lies, and Drug War Statistics, a critical analysis of claims made by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. There's a clip. You can watch Murray and Robertson debate about the drug war and the office's methodology at the Cato Institute. But the question is, when will Obama and Eric Holder finally kick Murray to the curb and replace him with someone other than When will Obama and Holder finally kick Murray to the curb and replace him with someone other than another anti-cannabis zealot masquerading as a scientist? The Washington Monthly Charlie Homans casts some much-needed white-hot light in Mr. Murray's direction in an article called "The Bushy Obama Can't Fire." That's available on thedailybeast.com. You can check out the book, Lies, Damn Lies, and Drug War Statistics, over on Amazon. You can go to whitehousedrugpolicy.gov. And there's, of course, strange, disturbing connections with Murray that I can't even fully get into right now. I believe it was up on whale.to. But the second story about trees, this is a better one. You're going to find some solace in some of the things going on. This from the Examiner. The White House Christmas tree will be a fir from West Virginia. A Fraser fir from West Virginia will be the Christmas tree displayed inside the White House this year. Tree farmers Eric and Gloria Sundback were selected this month as grand champions of the National Christmas Tree Contest. It's a record fourth win for the Sundbacks, S-U-N-D-B-A-C-K-S. Their trees were displayed at the White House twice during Reagan's administration and once under Carter. The Sundbacks have grown Christmas trees since 1956, including the past 50 years in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, about 80 miles northwest of Washington. Always looking for ways to defend and promote my home state of West Virginia, and this is a pretty damn good one. So, at least a Fraser fir grown in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, is going to be the Obamasaya's tree. And then it gets even more personal. From CanadaFreePress.com, the First Lady now requires 26 servants. I think initially it was something like 20, but new information has been collected. We even have a lot of the names and salaries of all these folks who are working for Michelle Obama, with some folks asking up on the comments on CanadaFreePress.com, how can I get one of those jobs? It's one of the better paying jobs you would ever find. But let's get serious, and let's shift gears to the drills. For every drill I'm aware of and mentioning days or weeks in advance, there's always the drills that sneak up, and I look and go, oh shit, that's tonight. In this case being last Wednesday night, early Thursday morning, Falcon Virgo 09-11. That's the official name of this drill. Falcon Virgo 0911. Flight exercise went down in the District of Criminals late Wednesday night, early Thursday morning. This from defenselink.mil. The North American Aerospace Defense Command, that's NORAD, and its geographical component, the continental U.S. NORAD region, conducted training flight exercises on Thursday, August 27th, in the National Capital Region. That's the NCR in Washington, D.C. More on that from Wikipedia. Exercise Falcon Virgo 0911. Again, this was written beforehand, but it's now after. Exercise Falcon Virgo 0911 will occur between midnight and 2 a.m. Thursday, August 27th. The exercise comprises a series of training flights held in coordination with the Federal Aviation Administration. So, again, together at last, NORAD and FAA, what could possibly go wrong? The FAA, the National Capital Region Command Center, the Joint Air Defense Operations Center, the Continental U.S. NORAD Region, CONUR, the Civil Air Patrol, U.S. Coast Guard, and CONUR's Eastern Air Defense Sector. Exercise Falcon Virgo 0911 is designed to hone NORAD's intercept and identification operations, as well as procedural tests of the NCR Visual Warning System. A strange PDF linked up for you there. The exercise includes two Civil Air Patrol Cessna aircraft and one Coast Guard Dolphin helicopter. Residents may see these aircraft approaching and flying in the vicinity of the Washington, D.C. area as part of this exercise during the late night and early morning hours and continuing through the scheduled exercise hours. In the event of inclement weather, the exercise will be pushed to the next day. Phone numbers and links for more information on Exercise Falcon Virgo 0911 that I have linked up for you goes to notanotherconspiracy.com. And all the bizarre military pages and Google searches on all these alphabet agencies. But it says it all right there. When we're watching the drills, when one comes along called Falcon Virgo 911, we're going to pay attention. Paying attention to the drills. Because we know of the multitude going on the morning of 9/11, which we are a mere 2 weeks away from the 8th anniversary. So, it's time for the 9/11 updates. Anniversary ailments, plans, and beams. The first bit from MediaCasterMagazine.com, media making plans for 9/11 anniversary and beyond. But interestingly enough, from VigilantCitizen.com, a great-looking news site that I just stumbled across recently, VigilantCitizen.com. They go over the top five worst 9/11 memorials, where they note that 9/11 has inspired myriad of memorials, which are scattered all across the country. Some of them are questionable in taste. Others contain strange occult symbolism, while others simply piss people off. The five most offensive, which Vigilant Citizen goes into in further detail, but I just bust it down to the list. Number five, the Boston Memorial. Number four, the Polish Plaque. Number three, the All-Seeing Eye Memorial. Number two, the Teardrop Memorial. And number one, the Crescent of Embrace. All of these memorials, as you would expect, are replete with occult symbology and bad taste. 9/11 was a terrible tragedy, no matter who made it happen. Rumsfeld. False flag. Since this event was the most terrible terrorist attack committed on U.S. soil, it is simply fitting that many memorials appear in honor of those who unjustly lost their lives. Some of these are very touching, inspiring, and heartfelt. Others, not so much. The top five worst 9/11 memorials by way of Vigilant Citizen. Another bit about Bob Novak. We, of course, noted Robert Novak's passing last week, he being what we've jokingly seen referred to as the father of the 9/11 truth movement, because of his article, Beyond Pearl Harbor, published on September 13th, 2001, where he notes that security experts and aviation officials quietly agreed that the simultaneous hijacking of four airliners was an inside job. So, a talking head named Debbie Schlussel cites those crazy 9/11 sites talking about Novak's inside job piece. That, of course, by way, thanks to 911blogger.com. And now the beams. Steel beam from 9/11 attacks returned to the new World Trade Center site. By way of the Deutsche Press Agency, a massive steel column from the original World Trade Center destroyed by terrorist attacks on September 11, 2001, was returned to its original site on Monday to be a part of the memorial monument for the victims.
It was lifted by a massive crane hanging high above a place once called home.
It meant something different for everyone. For me, it was a symbol of hope.
The last column was moved from the Trade Center site 7 years ago. Now it has returned to be part of the future September 11th memorial.
The last column took on such important meaning back during the recovery. It really became emblematic of such effort and compassion that was put into cleaning up the site and remembering the fallen.
The beam, which had been preserved in a hangar at Kennedy Airport since 2002, was transported early Monday morning with a procession down West Street. Later, it was lowered into its place at bedrock level of the site. As construction of the memorial takes place around the last column, it will be enclosed inside a specially designed climate-controlled pavilion where its preservation will continue. The beam has special meaning for family members like police officer Arthur Leahy, whose brother James, also a cop, was killed on 9/11.
The beam itself is actually, shows the strength of New York coming back here. The tower's growing, the steel beam's going to be part of this memorial.
Workers who took part in the recovery effort were also among those watching the beam being put into place.
It became a symbol when you came in here. You always saw that beam. It was one of the largest beams here, and it became a symbol for us to know that we have to keep working and cover as much as we can recover.
Lee Ielby also worked at the site after losing his firefighter son on 9/11.
Seeing it come back just means progress. It means that we are moving ahead. We are thinking about tomorrow. We're going to have a beautiful memorial and museum here when we're finished.
Officials say they are on track to complete the memorial in time for the 10th anniversary of the terrorist attacks. The museum portion of the project is scheduled to be completed the following year. In Manhattan, Roger Clark, New York One.
That's another video swiped by me and posted up to youtube.com/MediaMonarchy. The last several 9/11 updates. Lucky Larry Silverstein, the WTC owner, of course also the owner of the Willis Tower, formerly the Sears Tower in Chicago, he can now stop paying those developer penalties, as of course they've all been battling about who's going to get to make what in the new Ground Zero. But from, again, the Associated Press, lawyers can question 9/11 suspect in writing. Lawyers for a Guantanamo Bay detainee will be allowed to question, in writing, accused 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM. The decision is a setback for government lawyers who had sought to limit the scope of detainee lawyers' challenges to the detention and prosecution of terror suspects. It's a setback. Cooperation in sunlight is a setback. In a written ruling, Judge Ricardo Urbina says lawyers for detainee Abdul Rahim Ghulam Rabbani can submit written questions about their client to KSM. Prosecutors say he worked for Mohammed, but Rabbani's lawyers contend he was just a menial servant, not part of any terror network. The ruling says prosecutors may review the answers before delivering them to Rabbani's lawyers to remove any national security info. We've noted many times before, we will note it again by way of Russia Today, the tragedy of 9/11 that continues to this very day is in the hundreds of 9/11 first responders dying of cancer. We covered John McNamara last week, dead of cancer from the toxic dust that, as we went over in the B-side episode, of course, the EPA doesn't want to tell you about the weed killer known as atrazine that's in the drinking water. You can trust the EPA. The air was safe to breathe at Ground Zero. From the Miami Herald, Army judge says 9/11 lawyers can't see those CIA black sites. So we get goods from one judge and bads from another. A military judge says defense lawyers for an alleged 9/11 plotter held at Guantanamo don't need to inspect secret CIA overseas prisons to determine whether the accused al-Qaeda terrorist is competent to stand trial. Judge Stephen Henley, an Army colonel, ruled Monday that the so-called black sites have likely changed enough since 2006 that an inspection would be of no use to Ramzi bin al-Shib's Pentagon-appointed defense lawyers. More on Ramzi from HistoryCommons.org and more on Army Colonel Judge Stephen Henley from good old Wikipedia. Again from 9/11 blogger that goes to an article by John Foster. They call it, "Why is Afghanistan so important?" in the Toronto Star. However, 9/11 blogger cuts to the point and says, "Here's why we went to Afghanistan and it wasn't 9/11. The last 9/11 update we have for you by way of bradblog.com, and that's Sybil Edmonds' deposition video and transcript have been released. She, of course, has noted extensively, and now it is on the record, that bin Laden worked with the intelligence agencies up until 9/11. These videos total almost 3.5 hours of deposition video. I downloaded all of them. I didn't embed them. We're not going to play any clips, but it's all there. And again, it's incumbent on you to get those and not only to save them, but to share them. We're going to have to pick up some steam here on MediaMonarchy.com as we jump to Police State International. More camps, more curfews, more tasers, and even a youth spy force. Florida mayoral candidate wants a 1,000-strong youth spy force. This from Paul Joseph Watson. A frontrunner to become mayor of Orange County, Florida, proposes to combat crime in the area by creating a 1,000-person-strong spy force who would cruise around neighborhoods on bikes, reporting suspicious behavior to uniformed supervisors, a creepy program with dark undertones of the Hitler Youth program of 1930s Nazi Germany. Matthew Falconer. F-A-L-C-O-N-E-R. Matthew Falconer, who professes to be a libertarian, has been handing out a business card to potential voters outlining his platform. On the back of the card, Falconer outlines his intention, rather, to, quote, improve public safety by putting 1,000 additional observers on patrol in your neighborhood. His website goes into further detail as to what this new program will entail, MatthewFalconer.com/safety.htm. It's the nanny state. It's the Stasi force. It's the rat on your neighbor's 1984 effect. There are clips, there are videos, there are links, and there is documentation for this throughout history. And again, we'll note that, of course, not even to mention Rahm Emanuel, author of the book The Plan, about his plan for you to go to compulsory boot camp to be involved in national service. Look it up. They write it down. I ain't making it up. We need a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, and just as well-funded. NORAD, again, more about NORAD. More about the upcoming 2010 Winter Olympics that are going to be happening in Vancouver. NORAD to assist security efforts at Vancouver Olympics. Just probably another example of our security and prosperity partnership. In hopes of preventing terrorist attacks, 2010 Olympic organizers will deploy 8,000 security personnel, spend as much as $1 billion in Canadian government funds, and elicit help from NORAD. More on H.R. 645 and the FEMA concentration camps. This article from Byron Tripp. That's up on 1330 AM, WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. They go all the way through it. You can read all about it. I hit the link. Let's go to govtrack.us, H.R. 645, National Emergency Centers Establishment Act. We covered this earlier in the year. It's all there. They've written it all down. They set it all up. Why do you think they set it all up? Strange similarities between the recent New York Times and The Economist right-wing terrorism threat articles. That's good work there. And again, showing the Operation Mockingbird effect. UK police might be issued a newer, higher-powered taser. That's from The Guardian. Meanwhile, in L.A., a man dies in the subway after being tasered 3 times, getting us used to it. We've mentioned this before. Marion, Alabama riot forces the city into a curfew from WSFA.com. Just 1 day after a riot in the small Perry County town of Marion, Alabama, a curfew for everyone between the hours of 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. Anyone caught outside the gates of their subdivision sector after curfew will be shot. UK police steal valuables from cars in a lesson for drivers. This is from the Daily Mail. Police taking valuables from unlocked cars to teach drivers to be more careful. Thanks, Officer Friendly. Lastly, from PCMag.com, the ACLU is suing the Department of Homeland Security over laptop searches. We now quickly move to a quick, ugly list of all the latest updates in the world of mystery, memes, and mayhem. Peltier, Dunn, Toxic Talk, and Cult Killings first up on the History Mystery Tip. Imprisoned since 1977... for the alleged murder of 2 FBI agents, Leonard Peltier has been denied parole again. Meanwhile, Squeaky Chrome gets out. Meanwhile, McGrahee, the supposed Lockerbie bomber, gets out. Leonard Peltier rots. That story's from IndianCountryToday.com. More on that, freedom denied again for Leonard Peltier. That's from SocialistWorker.org. The other story that's grabbing a lot of headlines... Cops believe 1991 kidnapped victim has now been found alive in South Lake Tahoe, California. Two people are in custody, and now I believe it is pretty much confirmed. That was from the LA Times. We got more from the DPA. Kidnapped girl resurfaces after 18 years as sex slave. What disturbing things will come to light remains to be seen. We'll reference the Sinister Forces more in just a moment. But speaking of those, the Reinhard Galen Organization, the Galen Org. That would be Nazis. That would be Operation Paperclip. And it would go from the OSS to the CIA. More on that from Alex Constantine. A flashback going back to 1991, where some ballyhooed book about Nancy Reagan, buried within there, it goes over her sexual trysts with Frank Sinatra and Reefer Madness with Jack Benny. So, fucking Frank and getting high with Jack Benny. Frank Sinatra, of course, connected to Mia Farrow, connected to Rosemary's Baby, connected to Manchurian Candidate. Don't have time to play the clip, and it wouldn't really make sense unless you watch this thing, but it's been leaked by staffers at CNN, and we now know that the joke is on us. CNN Gulf War I propaganda produced by the Pentagon. It's a CNN fake newscast. Fake palm trees. Paid for by the Pentagon. That's 91. That's Gulf War I. The more things change. A quick rundown of the media memes. The author, Dominic Dunn, has died at the age of 83, known for his books like The Two Mrs. Grenvilles, Too Much Money, and there's even a documentary about him coming out soon called After the Party. Well-known writer, writer for Vanity Fair, connected to the O.J. Simpson case, and interestingly enough, his daughter, Dominique Dunn, one of the stars of Poltergeist, she was murdered. Author Dominic Dunn dies at the age of 83. Ellie Greenwich, Chapel of Love, Be My Baby, Leader in the Pack, and tons more co-writer. She has died at the age of 68. Just some of those great girl group Phil Spector tracks. And again, all these things have connections to Sinister Forces. Phil Spector, gun brandishing wacko. FBI drove Black Power actress Jean Seberg to suicide, her son claims. This from the Times Online. The son of Jean Seberg, the American actress and icon of France's New Wave cinema, has accused the FBI of fueling the psychological pressure that drove her to commit suicide with an overdose of drugs and drink 3 decades ago. My mother felt persecuted, said Diego Gary, referring to a destabilization campaign against Seberg by the FBI on account of her support for the Black Panthers. Actress Misha Barton recently, and this is crazy celebrity news from OMG on Yahoo, she's broken her silence about the involuntary psychiatric holding she just endured. The granddaddy of Toxic Talk Radio, a guy named Bob Grant, is coming back in New York City. See more phony left-right hate speech. And appropriately enough, I'd never heard this clip. It's from an interview whose origin I cannot determine, but it is the one and only George Carlin on conspiracy.
You know, if I had to say to you, what is the answer? I would say massive bloodshed. I really would. I don't really, honestly, deep down, believe in political action. I think the system contracts and expands as it wants to. It accommodates these changes. I think the civil rights movement was an accommodation on the part of those who own the country. I think they see where their self-interest lies. They see a certain amount of freedom seems good, an illusion of liberty. Give these people a voting day every year so that they'll have the illusion of meaningless choice. Meaningless choice that we go like slaves and say, "Joy, I voted." The limits of debate in this country are are established before the debate even begins, and everyone else is marginalized and made to seem either to be communist or some sort of disloyal person. A kook, there's a word, and now it's conspiracy. See, they've made that something that should not be even entertained for a minute. The powerful people might get together and have a plan. Doesn't happen. You're a kook. You're a conspiracy buff. So, the only way you cure that, death, bloodshed. I don't advocate it, but I see that it's really the only answer.
Jesus. Still speaking the truth from beyond the grave, the one and only George Carlin. Quickly through the murder and mayhem, Michael Jackson's death, the mask of pop communion, the king of pop, his death has now been ruled a homicide. Pipe bombs went off at a Hillsdale High School in San Mateo, California. Alex Ushak, 17-year-old high school student charged with trying to kill a teacher and an aide. That's by way of MSNBC as well as Copycat Effect. ABC reports that a 2001 Colorado triple homicide was a cult killing. By way of Alex Constantine, he points us to the ABC article, Did Simon Say Kill? Leo Obstbaum, O-B-S-T-B-A-U-M, Leo Obstbaum, design director for the upcoming 2010 Winter Olympics in Vancouver, dies suddenly at the age of 40. And lastly, Tennessee GOP state senator resigns amid lurid sex scandal with a 22-year-old intern. Senator Paul Stanley. Not the singer for Kiss. Geopolitics, elections, Lockerbie, lies, and more. Karzai widens his lead in the Afghan vote count. That's probably outdated now, but that's from the Washington Post. And, of course, Challenger Abdullah says that the polls were rigged. That's from Reuters. Massive truck bomb, meanwhile, kills dozens in Kandahar. That's from Press TV. The latest on the Lockerbie release, Megrahi will accuse an American codenamed Abu Elias, A-B-U-E-L-I-A-S, of carrying out the Lockerbie bombing. More on that from Cryptogon.com. Evidence reveals Libyan-connected Lockerbie bombing is innocent. That's by way of InfoWars. Al-Megrahi is home and he is innocent. That's from The Independent out of the U.K., and even more. One of the blogs, Daily Politics blogs, from Andrew Neil on the BBC. Very murky waters indeed. And what he means to say is that there is even a Rothschild connection to the Lockerbie release. We even have a new article from Lisa Pease on the doubts about Lockerbie. That's on consortiumnews.com, and a flashback article from 2007 by ohmynews.com. Lockerbie evidence fabricated by the CIA and the real culprits have escaped justice. The last geopolitics note, but again, notice the theme from ABC News. Iraq restores concrete walls in Baghdad. Foreign minister says attack may have been inside job. Workers used giant cranes to raise concrete walls around the blast scarred foreign ministry and other government buildings last Saturday as Iraqi authorities sought to bolster security after suicide truck bombings that killed scores in Baghdad. They think it may have been an inside job. BioWars, swine flu updates, dark winter and October surprises. It's going to be a dark winter for public health as we meet Homeland Security's new bioterror, Tsarina. And her name is Dr. Tina O'Toole. Another great article from Tom Burkhart on anti-fascist calling. The flashback for you, my friends, is to watch the videos produced by the feds for the drill known as Operation Dark Winter that happened in the early year, in the early part of 2001, in the winter of 2001, a bioterror drill involving CIA guys and fake little clips to make the drill seem real. That's one of my best playlists up on youtube.com/MediaMonarchy. Operation Dark Winter. Cryptogon.com covers the continuing militarization of biological scientists. Sciences, Examiner.com goes into the H1N1 October surprise prevention. Authorities prepare to seize kids during swine flu pandemic. Most UK general practitioners may reject the swine flu vaccine. And as if it needs to be spelled out any more plainly for you, on the Microsoft General Electric Talking Head Network, it's hard sell propaganda for a soft kill vaccination.
But hand washing alone, I think this is one time when Americans want to show up and get this vaccine. What I worry about is that there's enough distrust of the American government. People are actually out and numb over the Wall Street thing. And they're going to look at Big Pharma and go, please, just another way to make a buck. And they're going to go, don't tell me what to do. Well, you know what? I can't tell you what to do, but I'm going to tell you what I think you should do. And what you should do is get this vaccination.
And tell us just, again, to address the aspect of distrust or people's laziness or just they don't want to deal with it or it's too scary, whatever it is. What is it that you see about this particular flu virus, this particular time, that makes you come on this particular show and not others and say, I think this is real. I think that we have to get off of our derrieres and take some action here because there's a real risk of a meaningful swath of this country. You do now what we do now as a country. Employment of the vaccine and in hand washing and covering your cough.
And look, this is one time. Forget the conspiracy. Listen to our government agencies. These guys are telling the truth. You know, there's no conspiracy here, folks. Just get your damn vaccine.
All right. Thank you, doctor. Thank you. No.
That's some pretty tough talk from some corporate talking heads telling you to get off your ass and take the damn vaccine. It's no conspiracy theory. It's the truth. Trust them. Line up. Take the shots. Filled with live viruses. Brought to you by Baxter. Brought to you by the people who have resurrected the 1918 Spanish flu. Brought to you by the people who work in labs and create germs that somehow escape, that then they can offer you the antidote. It's another case of problem, reaction, solution. They cause the problem to generate the reaction out of us so they can offer the solution they wanted to offer in the first place, and that's soft kill eugenics. Swine flu fear-mongering, a mass psyop, that's the question being asked by RedDirtReport.com. Setting the people up to die, a conspiracy of silence about the actual natural remedies for swine flu, that's of course from NaturalNews.com. Again, we return to West Virginia, where it is noted from DailyMail.com, the Charleston Daily Mail, that Charleston medical workers get the flu shot or get fired. A couple other science notes. Man-made organisms will be here in 4 months, say biologists. That's from the DailyMail.co.uk. John P. Holdren, author, co-author of Ecoscience, Obama's top science advisor, who talks about compulsory abortions, mass forced vaccinations, and geoengineering the atmosphere. Somebody dug up that John P. Holdren was talking about geoengineering the atmosphere back at the 2007 Goldman Sachs conference. It all comes together. Again, thanks to the fine folks at the Council on Foreign Relations. Lastly, on the BioWar swine flu updates, dark winter and October surprises, the CDC, the Center for Disease Creation, turns to the, of course, social networking sites to scare you to death, to shoot yourself up with thimerosal and squalene and green monkey viruses. Document it. Quickly now, economy crash updates, the Fed failures and a bailout bust. Another great article from CorbettReport.com where Tiny Tim Geithner says that auditing the Fed is a, quote, line that we don't want to cross. There's an interview, there's a video by way of Dig in the Wall Street Journal where Geithner was pressured about the growing popular movement to audit the Fed, as we noted from on Google News this morning, that perhaps the audit the Fed bill, H.R. 1207, might get an October vote. Geithner said, I'm sure people understand that you want to keep politics out of monetary policy. But he also said that an audit, which of course is something never done before in its 96-year history, is a, quote, line we don't want to cross, and that it would be, quote, problematic for the country. And what's really problematic for the country, my man James Corbett goes into further on the article. Geithner says, auditing the Fed is a line we don't want to cross. The last blast of Ocano crash are the headlines, strangely enough, from CNN and Money. Secret societies for C-suite executive assistants. It's basically talking about the upper elite, the ones who get to serve the elite. Secret society secretaries, essentially. Spain's BBVA buys Guarantee Bank as the 2009 toll for bank failures has hit 81. That's, of course, for last Friday. We'll see what happens today on this FDIC Friday. One analyst sees 150 to 200 more bank failures in the U.S. this year. However, the former CEO of Bank United said 1,000 banks are going to fail in the next 2 years. Millions face shrinking Social Security checks. That's from the Washington Times. Unemployment edges up to Great Depression level. Judge orders Fed to disclose who received the bailout trillions. I wonder who. The Brookings think tank experts admit that the stimulus is a bust. Rhode Island government to shut down for 12 days. Obama's spending plans will nearly double the national debt. We already hit that from CNSNews.com. There it is again. U.S. problem banks at a 15-year high. Interestingly enough, helicopter Ben Bernanke's personal bank account got struck with identity theft. That's from the Associated Press. And lastly, do you hear that? Sudden, ominous music heard across the U.S. as the nation panics.
Joining us, we are continuing our coverage of the ominous music that is sending panic across the nation. This essential music was first heard throughout the country at 3:10 Eastern Standard Time this afternoon, setting citizens and government officials on high alert.
Something really bad is going to happen. I can just feel it.
We go now live to Washington correspondent Jane Carmichael with an update.
Hi, Andrea.
Jane, do we have any more information on the source of this music?
Well, Andrea, the AP is reporting the ominous music is being caused by an intrepid young journalist who is currently rifling through a classified government dossier.
Okay,
but moments ago, the New York Times website took to the story claiming that the music may be linked to a group of wealthy recent high school graduates speeding along a winding road in a red convertible, screaming and laughing with the hubris of youth.
Okay.
At this point, we just don't know.
Okay, now we've been informed that police nationwide are on the lookout for attractive teen girls wandering by themselves.
Yes, they are. And experts say their chances of being hacked to pieces by knife-wielding maniac have increased over 600% since the music began.
I'm sorry, Jane. I'm just getting word that we've got some footage of that now.
I think it's just Joe doing this. He must be playing a prank.
Come on, Joey. Put me off. Honey, Joey, come on.
Interestingly there, but Jane, is the telephone watch still in effect?
Yes, absolutely. Officials are saying not to let your phone ring suspensefully two or three times, as the call will likely be completely harmless, a neighbor or a friend. But be very careful after you hang up. When you're standing there relieved, that is when the horrible event is most likely to occur.
Okay, FEMA is attempting to bring an end to the music using a variety of strategic phrases, but so far it's been unsuccessful. Let's go now live to Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Come on, it'll be fun. Guys, what's that shadow in the water? If that wasn't you, and that wasn't me, then what was it? Watch how a real man does it.
No development there as of yet. Now, Jane, I understand President Obama has been taken to an undisclosed location. Can you confirm that, Jane?
Well, you know, Andrea, there is no authoritative word, but apparently the White House is...
Oh, my God! Jane!
Oh, my God!
Jane! Okay, we seem to have lost that signal, but we'll bring you more information as soon as possible. Moving on, a new erectile dysfunction drug that works by chemically lowering a woman's expectations.
Something bad is about to happen. I can just feel it. As you heard them say, in that latest video from The Onion. Ominous music. Sudden ominous music heard across the U.S. nation panicking. A little bit of Onion satire to help the medicine go down. Quickly, my friends, let's run down the list of some of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week that I've kept track of. The DOD Network Information Center, the Navy Network Information Center, Indiana Department of Education, U.S. Courts DCN, Colocation, Lockheed Martin, Wells Fargo, University of Oregon, J.P. Morgan Chase, New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, Epitaph Records, which is awesome, out of L.A., the U.S. Department of State, Booz Allen Hamilton, NORAD, the military, the USMC, the Marines, rather, and again the Navy, and the Sewage and Water Board of New Orleans. The Residence Inn in Tulsa, Oklahoma, hit me up from ZeroPointRadio.com. And lastly, Goldman Sachs, visiting MediaMonarchy.com out of Trenton, New Jersey. My friends, that is another breakneck, jam-packed episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's August 28th, 2009. This has been episode 138. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, imploring you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.